Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge. And this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. Something pretty awful happened in January. Not in the world, I mean to me personally. My dad died. He lived on his own in Birmingham. I didn't see enough of him. And his partner died of cancer 4 years ago. And to be honest, my dad had never really sort of recovered from the grief. And we kind of had this warning system set up whereby he told me, you know, like if I'm... I'll share all your articles on Facebook. If I stop doing that, check up on me. And January 9th, I noticed he had stopped. I couldn't raise him on the phone. And the next day, I was due to record a podcast interview with Matthew Engel about his book about the railways, which came out in, I think, episode 72. And I was so distracted, I was incredibly rude to Matthew, who's an absolutely lovely man. And when I told him the reason why, he was like, no, do you want to stop? But I wanted to finish the interview, even though my mind was elsewhere. So eventually we managed to get someone around to check and found that everything was not all right. And my dad had died. So this has kind of been where my head has been for much of the last couple of months. I mention all this for two reasons. First of all, I have a column about my relationship with my father in this week's edition of the New Statesman, talking about how, you know, we learned to communicate by arguing about politics, and how our divergent views on the Brexit vote kind of made that much more difficult. But the other reason is I kind of wanted to do something at some point as a sort of, I don't know, tribute is putting it too strongly, but my dad and I were very different people in many different ways. We have very different politics. We have very different ideas of what life was really about. But something I kind of did get from him, I think, is my obsession with large bits of physical infrastructure. Like, my dad was an engineer. He had a lot of books on engineering and on major infrastructure projects, which I would kind of pore over as a kid. And, you know, we were interested in different things. He was never really sort of a trains guy. But it was something that we did have in common. So what I thought I would like to do is I'd invite someone who randomly my dad added on Facebook about a year ago, which is slightly confusing and worrying thing to do. But a media friend of mine who my dad, I think, just wanted to chat to about engineering. And I thought it'd be kind of a nice little tribute to get the guy in question in, so we could talk about... Well, we're going to talk about trains.
My name is Jim Waterson. Until about a week ago, I was the political editor at BuzzFeed UK. And hopefully, as long as this podcast doesn't ruin my reputation, I'll soon become the media editor at The Guardian.
Okay, so we're your in-between job, really.
You are my one freelance commitment, which I think I can get away with on the basis that there is no way that this could be too controversial.
I don't know. We're gonna list railway journeys, so we'll see.
There will be lots of angry letters.
Yeah, people feel strongly about these things. Before that, though, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on now is because of this sort of slightly confusing thing that happened in February 2017 when my dad added you on Facebook.
Yeah, I never add anyone on Facebook, or at least I used to try not to. I thought Facebook was bad before it was cool. But yeah, when I saw your dad very sweetly, inexplicably pop up in my "Would you like to add this friend" thing and start talking about obscure bits of railways, I couldn't help but press confirm.
But the thing is, this wasn't like a habit of his. Like, he didn't like go through like my friends list. In fact, like after an old school friend of mine added my dad after meeting him at my wedding, my dad said, "Does he not get out much or something?" Like, he found that a bit odd. So you are clearly special in some way to him that I'm not quite clear. What is it you would talk to him about on Facebook? How did this?
Well, it wasn't regular conversation. It was just occasionally it'd pop up when you'd post something very in depth. You know, no doubt a sort of a city metric guide to resignalling your bathroom or something like that. I don't know whatever your day to day content is, and he'd pop up.
I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, it's quite a good headline there. And he'd pop up and object to some minor detail that you got wrong on the engineering of it. And I'd always firmly agree with him, is basically my memory. But it was very sweet. I think I asked whether John got everything from him in terms of the obsession with odd bits of infrastructure. And he seemed happy to confirm that, yes, I am entirely responsible for City Metric and its entire existence.
But he wasn't really a train guy. Like, I mean, he would take a train occasionally, but he was always much more, like, he was a bit of a sort of Top Gear sort of type. And he'd been a water engineer. That was his profession. So he basically spent his life, like, walking around reservoirs, taking notes on them. He did have these, he had a couple of books that I remember very clearly from my childhood. One was called things like London Under London or Subterranean London, which was that sort of intersection of, like, you know, the sewer system, which was his line of interest, and the tube, which was my line of interest. So that was probably like a key text in our relationship, I would imagine.
Right, so you go around with the dowsing sticks trying to find where the Victoria Line crossed a Bazalgette sewer or something like that.
And he wasn't that active, but it's probably like he might have looked at it on a bit of Google Maps or something. Yeah. Anyway, so we are going to talk about something that is probably not of direct interest to my late father, but sort of inspired by him. We are going to talk about railway lines, because something I did after my dad's partner died in 2014, is the two of us took a brief holiday together to the Lake District, and then I made him drive out of his way to drop me at Carlisle. And then he got back in the car and went down the motorway. Can you guess why it was I wanted to go to Carlisle and come home on myself?
You wanted to go to Carlisle,
yep,
on your own and get back on your own.
Yeah. Can you imagine why that might have been as a train nerd?
Because you wanted to do the Settle and Carlisle line.
I did want to
do it. But you wanted to do it in reverse, which momentarily threw me because I was trying to think what it was called. But it's it's not the Carlisle and Settle, it's the Settle and Carlisle. Right.
It is, but the problem is if I'd got him to drop me at Settle, that would have been even further out of his way, and then I would have ended up in Carlisle, which isn't much use for
that's, me. That's very sweet of him. That's what dads are for, really, to drive you to take one-way journeys back across Britain.
I mean, it is instantly so that, like, he was worried about the traffic in Birmingham, so he did instantly get back on the motorway and bugger off, leaving me in Carlisle on my own for 4 hours, which was like quite a nice day out in Carlisle and doing my sort of Bill Bryson routine, wandering around, poking around museums and things. But
there's definitely something about you know, I was very embarrassed about it in my youth. Coming out as someone who's into railway infrastructure is a very painful moment in many people in their 20s lives,
but we've made great strides.
You have to, like, really, yeah, have the confidence and understand that society will increasingly be accepting of you, but yeah, no, I think, I mean, we've all been dragged around things by our parents that 20 years later suddenly seem incredibly interesting as you realize you're starting to morph into them. And railways, certainly for me, I think to a lesser extent yourself, maybe, is one of those.
No, I was always, I think my interest in railways kind of comes from a different place to yours, because I think yours is an engineering thing, whereas mine is kind of a map thing.
Mine was mainly working out how to get to gigs age 15 and 16 in an affordable manner, and having to work out every single bit of the ticketing system and every single route that would get me back for school. That was basically why I became obsessed. And then I was always, I mean, you know, when you're sleeping for the night on Leeds Station, counting every single train going in and out to make sure that you're getting the right one becomes a bit of an obsession. So weirdly, that's where it comes from travelling around. And then I suddenly remembered that my dad was also really into the engineering side of it. And then now we happily sit there while I bore him to death about what's going on the railway line at the bottom of his garden.
Oh, nice. Which line is it?
We've got the York to Scarborough line at the bottom of my parents' garden. So my dad tells the time by working out which service is going past. He doesn't look at the clock. He takes great enjoyment from going, oh, that's the 52. That's the once a week St. Pancras service. You can tell because it only runs on a Saturday. And then expects the whole table to applaud rather than just look at him with a slightly disgusted look.
So you grew up near York, right?
I grew up near York. My parents now live in York itself.
And York is, among other things, the home of the National Railway Museum. Do you think that's a factor in your...
Yeah, probably the bigger factor is... And I think we should crack on and start running through. So just to explain why we've ended up at this point talking about our top 10 railway journeys is there's always those books that people get for the relative they don't know what to buy at Christmas, which is sort of like top 1,000 things to visit before you die.
Did you get the Simon Jenkins?
And Simon Jenkins, his publisher, I mean, fair play to him. They must have sold so many copies of that.
I got that one this Christmas.
How many copies?
Just the one.
Just the one. I'd have thought you'd have got at least two or three.
Yeah. I don't have that many relatives, so...
Simon Jenkins, sort of, who's done this book called 100 Railway Stations to Visit Before You Die, or some equivalent of that, must have made a mint from it. And... whenever you flick through them, they're always a bit obvious. They're always a bit sort of, everyone's agreed already which the obvious ones, and it's just nice to have it repackaged again. So I thought, because I used to work until recently at a list site called BuzzFeed, and I once pitched a definitive guide, a very subjective guide to the best railway journeys in Britain that wouldn't be like this most beautiful thing in the country and this and that, but the ones that actually are really fun and good and interesting, have something to see out the windows or are special for a different reason. So because City Metric is about the only outlet that would ever let this be published, BuzzFeed quite understandably said no way, go and write something proper. Yeah. I thought we could just run through it and just argue about stuff as we go. And I tapped out my memory of it on the way here. So
I'm excited to find out where in here the Settle to Carlisle is, but we're going to do from 10 and we're going to count to 1.
We'll do a
I'm
proper rundown.
So I'm going to argue as we go, I think. So number 10
is the Loo branch line, and that's Loo with a L-O-double-O. No, I can't say that.
That's three O's. It's in Cornwall.
It's got
right?
an E at the end of it. Yeah.
It's a branch line in Cornwall.
It's a branch line in Cornwall. It's just one of those stupid things that shouldn't really exist and is inexplicably a part of the National Rail Network maintained to a standard. It's got stations on it that have about 30 punters a year. It's got you go down an incredibly steep slope from the main line, rattling along in some sort of pacer equivalent. You then stop because they cut the line off. The bloke goes to the other end, reverses, takes a token out of somewhere, and then trundles this thing, which I swear must be possible to do with a bus, all the way down into this little seaside town called Loo. And it's stunning. It's about 8 miles long. It's completely preposterous. It must cost the country millions a year to keep up. And I'm sure if you dared to suggest to anyone in Cornwall it should be removed, there'd be a campaign like you've never seen to save it.
It is sort of miraculous it survived beaching. It does sound like exactly the sort of thing that would have... like, there's hardly anyone there. It's not like a commuter area. It's kind of baffling that it... I'm very pleased it did survive. I would like to try it one day, but it's kind of not clear to me how it did survive.
Presumably, the good burgers of Luke said that their town would be... their tourist industry would be destroyed by it, and that someone made the case that if you did this clever thing, you could reduce the maintenance a little bit. But so many of the lines in Britain, so many of the places that are still doing okay or having revivals because they somehow kept their line in the 60s, and that was almost always because one person or a small group of people in the town mounted a campaign, and you know, or an MP was particularly efficient at telling the Ministry of Railways to keep it open, or in some cases even that there was just a quarry on the line. I don't even know whether that was one of these, but that was enough to keep it going. So that one is there at number 10 to symbolise. It's really pretty. It's nice. If you're in Cornwall, check it out.
All right.
But it's there because all of these stupid little wonderful preposterous bits of railway which are still there and maintained on the British network.
All right, give us what's number 9?
Number 9 is the journey from Swansea to Craven Arms, which is through the middle of Wales.
Craven Arms isn't a place, surely.
It's, I think it's named after the pub. I think it's one of those few towns that's actually named after the pub itself. And it is, I think I'm right in saying, that when they were looking at which railway lines to close under Beeching, Harold Wilson was told that goes through four marginal constituencies. No way are you closing it. And you go through, and I'm doing this from memory, so I'm apologies to any listeners. There's all the routes online, but places like Sugarloaf, which is basically a stop on the side of a mountain with about 40 passengers a year. You stop in endless villages where it seems the whole village's effort is put into maintaining the flower pots on the station platforms. And it takes forever, but you can tell by who's getting on. You know, there's people who've clearly travelled for hours, done all their big shopping for like the next 3 months in Swansea and are going back to whichever small village where they'll then get the bus, which will then take them halfway up a mountain. And that's how they live their lives. And if without this, they wouldn't be able to do it.
South Wales is one of those bits of the country that still has a surprisingly dense railway network, isn't it? If you kind of look at, I mean, we're a bit sort of, we're talking about a line out of Swansea. I'm talking more about the ones out of Cardiff, which is a bit to the east. Yeah. But because it's all the valleys north of Cardiff, every valley has its own railway line, effectively. So it looks like a surprisingly dense commuter network in a part of the country that's not that densely populated.
Yeah, and it seems to work, and they seem to still be expanding it. And every so often someone comes up with a plan to put more money into it. And they've probably benefited from the Welsh Assembly putting more funding in. Because you tend to do pretty well out of transport if you have a devolved assembly.
Yeah, and Cardiff has been a bit of a boom town the last 20 years with both like the arrival of devolution and like it becoming a sort of cultural hub with like major TV production going on there in a way that wasn't really happening before. So
yeah, and but you still won't be able to get your, I think I'm right in saying you won't be able to get an electric train to Swansea. I think they dropped that in the end. They sort of cancelled it, dropped it, revived it again several times over.
I think if we're talking about like, if the question is, has the government completed the electrification of X, then the answer is almost going to be no. Yeah. Give us number eight.
Number eight, HS1.
Okay, that's a change of pace.
Exactly. So all these best railway journeys in Britain are always like, well, if you go from Fotherington by Smythe and get the one train a day over the hill, you'll see views like you've never seen before. The excitement of when I first got on HS1 and we're like, this is stupid. There's this futuristic, slightly Japanese-style train which is going to whiz all the way through central London in a tunnel and then emerge over this bridge and then go right under the Thames and emerge at Ebbsfleet where there's absolutely nothing at all before whizzing off to Kent. I just thought it was so brilliant. It was sort of a vision of what we could have if we'd been like Europe and had to start again after World War II. That's what the British railway network would look like. We'd have like logical systems and things that just worked and self-contained and no Victorian tunnels.
You say it's a logical system, but it is also Britain's only specially designed high-speed railway line, and it goes from London to nowhere in particular. I mean, it's there because that's the route Eurostar comes in, like, from the continent. But HS1 is the branding for the domestic services, which go to Eastern Kent, where there's nothing. There's nothing in Eastern Kent. There's no significant settlements. Like, Ashford is the big town over there. And it must be less than 100,000 people. There's nothing there.
Well, it's fantastic for getting to Dover. You can go to Dover. You can go to Folkestone. Henry Bolton, when he was UKIP leader, was getting it home every night. I was, for some reason, someone insisted on sending me packed pics of him from the HS1 on the way home to Folkestone every night. I didn't really want to use them.
Was he with any blondes who looked like they might have interesting views on race relations?
I'm not entirely sure what we should legally refer to her as, but his ex, perhaps no longer his ex. Yes, he was definitely with her. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe they were just enjoying the futuristic feeling of riding HS1. It just had a sense of that sort of 60s white heat of industry that you just don't get anymore, where we've just done something really big and expensive and it's quite fun.
One weird thing I've found, if you look at sort of maps of the European high-speed rail network, actually, I think one of the less discussed reasons why we've not really built a high-speed rail network over here is we kind of already have one. Like, our existing intercity services are, by international standards, pretty nippy. Mm. It's just they're not kind of like the nippiest, you know, like it's 2 hours from London to Manchester or Liverpool, and that's like,
that's just a small country, really.
Yeah,
quite small,
and like half the population lives in that kind of the stretch from like Kent up to southern Lancashire is half the population of the entire UK, despite it being a relatively small share of the country. So
selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, in terms of railway journeys to take before you die, we'll rattle through the next few.
Okay, number seven.
The Kyle of Lochalsh line.
Okay, I'm guessing we're in Scotland.
We're in Scotland. We're in very northern Scotland. And all of the... If you ever want a week's trip, where you just buy a cheap ticket and get some Rover and just go all the way around, which is one of those, you can travel as much as you want in weeks. Going around northern Scotland is amazing. I actually, about 5 years ago, took a week's holiday, bought an all-line Rover, which is an unlimited ticket for the whole of the UK.
How much did that cost?
Cost me, I still was on a rail card, although I am now a millennial rail card holder, so I can do it again.
You fool bastard.
It cost about 300, 400 quid at the time, and it was amazing. We went from Kent to Cornwall, through Wales, up to the far, literally Thurso, and then back down to York and back down to London after that. And it was perfect. It was the most amazing amount of travelling in 7 days you can imagine. It was more logistical challenge than actual relaxing holiday, I'd say. But it was good.
I mean, it is in some ways signing up for a week of being stressed you're going to miss your train.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that the highlight was when I forgot it was a Sunday and realised that everything had fallen apart in terms of my plan.
Why the Kyle of Lochalsh? I can't even pronounce
Kyle of Lochalsh. So that runs from Dingwall, just north of Inverness, to Kyle of Lochalsh, which used to be the place you got the ferry to get to the Isle of Skye, and then they built a bridge, so it doesn't really have much of a purpose anymore. But next to the station platform at Kyle, literally you could walk onto the ferry from it. It was part of the same thing, and you just trundle across Skye to Skye. And the far north line, which is the one that runs from Inverness to Thurso, is amazing. But it's also the single bleakest thing you'll ever do in your life. It is just unrelenting. 4 hours to get from Inverness to Thurso.
There's 4 hours to go after Inverness.
Yes.
That's mind-blowing.
It is. You every so often...
You can get from London to Edinburgh in 4 hours.
Exactly. And so while it's worth doing, you will slowly lose the will to live. It's sort of a thing you do purely so you can be annoying on a podcast and say you've done it. Whereas going to Kyle and over to Skye and then coming off the southern end and back to Fort William is one of the best railway journeys in Britain. And it doesn't get enough credit. It's really nice. It's the ignored one. It doesn't have any special steam services. It's not through the bleakest bit of Scotland. It's just really pretty and nice. And it goes along a lovely valley. So yeah, there you are. Do all the Scotland lines, but don't forget Kyle.
Okay, number six.
Number six, North York Moors Railway.
Okay, you've just given me a look and done a hand gesture like, well, obviously the North York. I don't know where the North York Moors Railway is.
Do you know
I can probably make an educated guess at where the North York Moors are.
Where do you think they are, John?
They're probably in North Yorkshire.
They're actually north of York. That's the key bit.
Ah, I thought it was sort of a hip abbreviation for.
No, it's the north of York Moors.
Okay.
And all of
I don't really know what a moor is.
A moor is a bleak place where you can film period dramas about murders and things like that. It's useful for several things: military training, shooting grouse, and farmers who feel very unhappy about raising sheep.
I'm just not clear how it differs from other types of landscape.
Just bleak and open, and with lots of heather usually.
I'm just not sure that, like, you know, that's bleak is an official category when, like, deciding in these. Oh, that's incredibly bleak. That we'll call that one tundra. I don't think that's how it works. There must be other reasons.
Well, in the UK, it's a national park, and the North York Moors Railway is one of the earliest railways in the UK. It was shot under Beeching, and very, very quickly reopened as one of the first heritage railways in the UK. And my dad helped to relay a bit of it. In the early 70s, and his best mate, who died last week, Mark Sissons, whose funeral I was at, helped to run it with him. And so we'd always go up in the 90s. Mark lived at a railway cottage on this line, and I'd be able to stand on the footplate of whatever steam locomotive was going past, look at the go into the signal box and pretend, at least I was convinced I was directing the trains. Of course, the burly bloke behind me was actually pulling the levers when I was thinking I was pulling them. But it's some of the most stunning country in the UK, and a lot of heritage railways are quite boring. This one actually goes somewhere nice. It goes all the way to Whitby now, and it runs through some of the best country in the whole of the UK. So you go up there, you get to Pickering, you get on a steam train, or you get on a diesel train if you're a more interesting person. And then you trundle up to Whitby, where you can basically pretend to be a goth for a day. And so all in all, it's a great day out and a beautiful journey.
And convenient for Dracula. So.
Exactly, exactly.
Number five.
Going up, and I think it's called the Cambrian Line, when you go from Shrewsbury to a place, and oh, I'm so sorry, any Welsh listeners, Fwelly?
I can't even begin to guess what letters
it involves a P Fwelly, and a W, right? And an E, an H, and a couple of L's, I think. But you go all the way up the coast, on the west coast of Wales, and then you end up in Port Maddock, where there's you're close to the place where they filmed The Prisoner. What's the name of that?
Port Myron.
Yeah, so you're there. And there's a narrow gauge railway which chugs its way all over the hills of this bit of northwest Wales. It's through stunning countryside, and they connected two lines. And the way they did it was basically to run a track down the main road in this town. So a few times a day, the entire town comes to a standstill while a narrow gauge steam train pulls through the centre of the town across the main bridge. And then gets going again.
That's awesome.
It's absolutely fantastic. There's a helix where you cross over yourselves on the way up to gain height, and you trundle through past Port Merion at slow speed, and you end up on top of a mountain in Wales, and it takes forever. You just climb and you climb and you climb, and the engine at the front puffs away. And I'm sorry to any of the residents of, I think, who, for two reasons. One, I'm about to mangle the name of where they are, Blanau Festiniog, which is a settlement in the sort of mountains in the north of Wales. It's also the single bleakest place I've ever seen. You're up a mountain, it's slate mines all round, and it's just, it looks like sort of the end of the earth. It looks like a sort of Lord of the Rings mine. There's no sort of grassed over hills here. It's just bleakness, and then you can get a train down the other side, and it's lovely.
Okay, I mean, like, I've been sat here, I've been kind of like, you know, not faking it exactly, but actually, yeah, just one, done that, you know, North York Moors, I'm sure it's lovely. This is the first one where your descriptions made me like, when can I go on that? That sounds awesome, I want to do that now.
So the clever thing to do, go to Shrewsbury, stay a night there, and then get this long British rail line up to Fwelly, which I've mangled again, and then get on this steam train over the hills, and then at the other side, when you get up into the hills, there's an ancient British rail line which a few times a day will take you back down to Chester and to humanity.
This sounds awesome. It's okay, fantastic. I need to take some time off and do this.
And the next one is,
I've lost track of the numbers.
I think we're on four. I think the numbering system doesn't really matter. We're mainly just arguing and getting an idea. But
you say the numbering system doesn't matter, but I am going to get half a dozen letters going, oh, you missed out number five, actually.
Right. Well, I think we're on four. So I'm going to go for the Thames Link route.
Okay. What the hell?
I still get a kick out of it.
Why? It's dreadful. It's famously one of the most dreadful routes in London. Like, when I was a baby transport nerd and was, like, sort of, like, arguing on, like, you know, Usenet groups about London transport when I was,
you're showing
like,
your
17.
Age, John.
Yeah, I know. But there was a project they were planning to upgrade that line under the name Thameslink 2000.
I remember it. Because
they have not finished it yet.
So as someone from York who used to get the line down, King's Cross was always my portal to this terrifying place of which I was genuinely terrified called London. And when we got on, it would always have big adverts for Thameslink 2000 coming at the end of Blair's first term. That still hasn't happened.
Yeah. They're getting closer, I think. They're now talking next year, I think.
I think the end of this year it might actually happen.
But at some point, like, the Crossrail, which they literally had to bore a tunnel for under the whole of central London, has somehow lapped this existing route where it was just a matter of, like, you know, rewiring things a little bit for various reasons. It turns out that was incredibly complicated.
So the route that goes through London Bridge is fantastic, and when it will finally curve around properly, and I'm not sure at the time of recording whether I think they've started some sample services from New Cross or not, but that bit when you go into Blackfriars, which I still think is the most amazing station with the best view of London, that
Blackfriars station, for those who aren't familiar with it, was rebuilt a few years ago so that the platforms run across the river. It's the only station in London that isn't now on both sides of the Thames, effectively.
And it's got one of my favourite views in London, looking towards St Paul's and the City of London, the financial centre, and then down to Canary Wharf. And I just get that sense of going through past London Bridge. I think this journey is now possible again. Going through London Bridge, going up there, and seeing that view, and then the excitement of winding your way through sort of proto-Victorian tunnels all the way up to King's Cross, and then getting splurged out the other side. I always feel like you've sort of gone, you know, through City Thames Link, which is both the worst and the best bit of London railway stations, because it's clearly awful, but it's kind of wonderful how someone patched up central London in the 80s when there was no funding in Britain for infrastructure by basically coming up with a madcap idea. And the whole thing, the way it links this city that I always had a problematic relationship with, but now love, I just think it's actually kind of great.
But the services are terrible. Like, it is the most complained about railway in Britain, I believe.
Yeah, let's not get into that, though. We're just here for the journey. Okay. We're assuming everything's working.
Also,
here.
City Thames Link is the worst name for any station.
I know this is a long-running thing.
It's a whole thing. It's our local station in this office, that's all. Okay, number three. Oh, we're getting close.
Leeds to Blackpool.
Okay.
I think it's the thinking man, Settle Carlisle.
Where does it go?
So
via?
I think
I
maybe
it.
For your listeners, Settle to Carlisle is the archetypal.
Are you telling me Settle to Carlisle isn't even on the list?
Well, you'll have to find out, John.
Oh, we'll God, you're soon. A monster.
Settle to Carlisle is obviously stunning. I mean, it is objectively stunning. I think most people would know that. But Leeds to Blackpool winds its way through mill towns, which are kind of amazing. You feel like you're cutting through the Pennines in a way that you don't on the Settle Carlisle, because the Settle Carlisle goes over the top. They built big viaducts, they built big tunnels, they put the money in so they could run mainline trains. Wind your way to Blackpool from Leeds through places like Halifax and Hebden Bridge and all these great little towns that have a lot going on, far more than anyone normally gives them credit for. And you just get a sense of the actual north of England, not the bit which is big cities, not the bit which is pure countryside, but the sort of mid-sized towns that actually keep the place going. And also it's really pretty. They're often built onto the side of the valley, so you're winding around, you're chugging around, you're gaining height, you're going over the top, then you're ending up in Accrington, and then you keep going because you're in Accrington, and then and then at the end you can get to Blackpool, which is a very boring bit of the journey, but it's always fun to have a day trip to Blackpool.
How long does it take? I suspect it takes a very long time.
One of the worst things about, and I've just spent a few days in Yorkshire, is after a while in London, sort of when people explain that the bus is every 2 hours or that the train is every hour and then it takes 3 hours to get somewhere that I mentally think of as just around the corner, that's the problem with Northern Transport. It's just really not anything like good enough for the people that live there.
This is why Britain voted Leave. Number two.
It is. Number two, the East Coast Line. Most of it, but especially north of Doncaster.
Yeah, it's the northern bit that's the good bit.
It's the northern bit's the good bit. North of Doncaster, you have this wonderful bit where three power stations align, which if you're a infrastructure obsessive, is a beautiful sight, because it's all along the old coal fields. And then north of about Newcastle, when you get that stunning approach into Newcastle, you see all the bridges aligned over the Tyne. You get to look down, you see various bits of railway history, you get to see the whole city coming together, you go through that great central station, you've already been through York, Darlington, Newcastle, which all have these great big arched northeastern railway stations.
There is that stretch where you go through Durham, which is gorgeous, and then Newcastle very soon afterwards, and then you're basically hugging the coast from there till
and that Edinburgh. that obviously glorious. Is the perfection when you're just hugging the coast. You feel like you're about to go into the sea. You're on really nice, comfortable trains before the government gets rid of them and replaces them with the rubbish new ones. There's nothing better in life than getting a few beers, getting a ticket up to Scotland, and just soaking it all up from there. I almost put the West Coast Main Line, because that is also really nice going through Carlisle and up that way and through and winding through. Basically, anything that goes near the Scottish borders is generally quite good.
You can, I mean, but actually it's true of both of them, but you do sort of have to get out of the more urbanised bit of England before these lines are nice. Like the I've used the West Coast Line an enormous amount to get to Birmingham or Manchester, and those bits are kind of a bit rubbish.
They're bland, but the bit where you're really getting going to
only
Glasgow,
once you get past Preston that it starts getting... Yeah.
Glasgow is one of my favourite cities in the world, and I've had some of the best times ever there, and pulling into Central Station is still a kick, because you really feel like, if you've done London to Glasgow, that feels like a proper journey. It's as close to a proper journey you can get in Britain.
And I also love Glasgow from my limited experience of it, but one of the things I love about it is it does feel like a proper big city. It's not one that, like, there are a number of cities in this country, which I'm not going to name, which kind of feel a little bit like they're looking over their shoulder and just grumpy about... Like,
name them.
I'm not going to do
Is it
that.
Coventry?
No, I quite like Coventry. I'm just saying that if you're wandering around Birmingham, you will often hear the phrase, biggest outside London, or better than London.
Yeah, but it's
or
no
like,
Manchester, is it?
Yeah, Manchester's better. Manchester's better.
So there's that. I think going up to Scotland, either side of the country, is great. And you can do it on a sleeper, but you don't want to. You want to be awake, and you want to also have hit the point where you're just pleasantly pissed. You've got maybe you've been and got three or four of those pre-mixed gin and tonics, and you're on about the third. That's the sort of perfect level to be looking out at the countryside. Sunset coming in. Perfection.
All right, you've kept us in suspense. It's not the Settle to Carlisle, which is brilliant, by the way, and which is this magnificent folly that really shouldn't be there. It was like the last of the main lines built. It was completely economically unnecessary. It doesn't go anywhere. The only reason that it still exists, it doesn't even link up to the main line south beyond Leeds. Like, you can see how if they just diverted it a little bit, built another link in Bradford, there could be this route from St Pancras to West Yorkshire up to Carlisle, but they never finished that bit. So it's this completely pointless line that people only use to say they've been on the Settle to Carlisle.
I'm always hamstrung with guilt about it because of a childhood friend's dad took us both as a birthday treat on it, and we didn't understand why we were doing it and spent the whole time on our Game Boys. And you know, it's only in retrospect you go, he was trying to share the beautiful views of Yorkshire, and we were just probably trying to get a new high score on Mario because I was very excited to actually have access to a Game Boy. Anyway, John, right, which is your best railway journey in the whole of Britain?
Oh, you know, you would have thought, given everything, you would have thought that I would at some point have given some consideration to this, and I actually haven't. I haven't done enough of them, to be honest. I really like the northern bits of the west and east coastlines we just talked about. I have a weird soft spot for the quieter of the two routes to Cambridge, the one out of Liverpool Street.
Oh, you're into the route to Cambridge before it was cool, is that what you're saying?
It's like when I was, sorry world, I was at Cambridge. When I was at Cambridge, there were two lines from Cambridge to London. There's the one to King's Cross, which is the express one, but there's a slower, more trundling one that goes up that leaves Liverpool Street and goes up the Lee Valley, and then through the sort of beautiful bits of sort of western Essex, which are actually like a lot more picturesque than anyone would imagine them to be. And you basically just stop at all these sort of pretty country towns and these sort of fields of wheat. And it was actually because my childhood home was on a line into Liverpool Street. It was actually also slightly quicker and less stressful. So I have a soft spot for that one, but there's never a reason to take the bloody thing.
I've only taken it once, and that was after an all night clubbing, getting the first train home in the morning. And I've never felt more wretched in my life. So I've got bad vibes about that.
I used to, for reasons that would take a lot of explaining, I'm not going to do, I used to go to a monthly club night in Reading and get the first train back into Waterloo. And I would wake up somewhere around Clapham Junction, surrounded by all these commuters who were clearly disgusted by my very presence.
I think that's one of the best things about the whole railway system, just the sort of the mix of people that you see on it, and especially if you can really annoy the right ones at the right time.
Actually, there was having been to a party in Southampton once and got the first train back, I had to change trains at Vauxhall. Or something like that. No, I had to change trains at Clapham Junction to get to Vauxhall to get the tube, I think was what was going on. But, like, I was rushing for this train, and I was clearly going to miss it. And the driver said, yeah, well, get in here, and sort of let me ride one stop up in the carriage with him so I didn't miss the train. So that was a nice kind of, you know, boyhood dream. But again, after I'd been out all night and getting wasted. So anyway, this is all, we're just building up the suspense here. What's number one?
I think the best railway journey in Britain is...
Hang on, drum roll. That's going to come out really badly.
This is quite a personal one. Is Manchester Piccadilly to Manchester Oxford Road?
Okay, that's like... That takes 2 minutes.
Yes. It's fantastic. I used to do it when I lived in Manchester for a year, just to sort of get around the city.
It's like one stop up. It's around the corner.
Yes.
You can walk that in 10 minutes.
You could. Or you could go along a link that's in the city that really made... the railways into the thing that they are. You can go between two of the most different, most interesting stations. One a 60s futuristic, what should we do about this place, Manchester Oxford Road rebuild. One which is Piccadilly, which I think is still, I really like. It's a bit of a mess, but it's still kind of great. You can go past all the industrial sites. If you carry on a little bit further, you could see the areas that Marx and Engels were talking about when they were writing about the sort of plight of the English worker. You go over the place where Vimto was invented. You go past...
Well, that's worth it in itself, really, isn't it?
Yeah. If you look down, you can see a giant Vimto bottle painted red. Or whatever colour Vimto is it sort of black currency sort of colour? And I just think in terms of the best bit is that sense of you're floating above a city that was built around this sort of stuff. A city that is, if you're a City Metric listener, viewer, whatever, and if you've made it this far through the podcast, you will know what we mean. That buzz that you get from being elevated above it all, from seeing how it all fits together, from having a disgusting little river winding by you, you can pass... If you go on past Oxford Road, you're past the Hacienda, you're past all the stuff that sort of Manchester is now sadly turning into Liverpool about in terms of worshipping its past. But on a tiny little bit of track, you get, and if you go on past Castlefield, that's basically where everything began. That's where the first canals ended. That's where the first railway station in the world was. You're passing all of this. And so when I say Piccadilly to Oxford, maybe if you took the new curve all the way
Oxford curve, which links, which goes between... Deansgate is next up the line from Oxford Road, isn't it? And then you go over the Oxford curve.
But basically
Manchester, Victoria. Yeah.
A 2 or 3 minute journey through central Manchester will give you a sense of feeling like you're floating through a city, a sense that you're... really at the heart of everything and just the most amazing slice of history every second if you know where you're going. I lived there when I was 18 for a year, and I used to press my nose up against the window and try and work out what I was seeing. With every single building had something quite significant in British history about it. It was great. So yeah, right, that's nice. I think
left field choice,
but I think that is genuinely that sums up why it's there. The railway system isn't there basically to please a load of day trippers. It's a nice byproduct. And if you can get a bit of, you know, excitement and sightseeing out of your daily commute, then that's just nice, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure if you've listened to 35 minutes of this stuff, then you will probably be someone with strong views. So tell you what, why don't you send me them, and we might do a follow-up. Cheers, Jim.
Cheers, John.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.